Welcome to the Northeast Christian Podcast. We're so excited that you've decided to check out our weekly messages. We hope that you're challenged and inspired by what you're hearing today. We'd love to have you join us this weekend at one of our campuses or online at northeast.live. For more information on Northeast, visit us at necchurch.org. If you love the Northeast Podcast, subscribe to our channel and leave us a comment or a rating in the Apple Podcast Store. This weekend's message is from Tyler McKenzie. He's the lead pastor here at Northeast.
Well, as Adrian said, we are so excited about game day weekend. That is just 2 weeks away, so please make sure that you are making plans to be here and that you are noticing the differences in times and a little different than our normal schedule, so we cannot wait for that. My name is Melinda Jividen. I am the care pastor here at Northeast, and I'm so excited to get to spend this morning with you as we dive into week three of the series where we're talking about how to love the Ville in the workplace. And today we are going to be specifically focused on how we can care for those who we work with. So I'm going to ask you to start our time together a little differently than we normally do. So if you have your playbook that we handed out a few weeks ago, I want you to pull that out. If not, grab a piece of paper and a pen or even just a note on your phone. Just open it up because I'm going to ask you to take some notes. I'm going to be asking you to take a little bit of a quiz, but don't worry. There's no score at the end. You don't have to share your answers with anybody. This is just for you and you alone. So go ahead and get something out, and as you have that ready, I want to ask that you write down the answers to some questions I'm going to ask you, some very simple questions. So number one, I want you to write down the names of just three people who you work with, any three people. Now, before some of you immediately start tuning me out, please hear me say that if you don't work or feel like you have a job in the traditional sense of that word, then just write down three people who you interact with on either a daily or a weekly basis, somewhat regularly. These people cannot be a part of your family, though. That's the only requirement. So once you have these three names down, number two, I want you to write down the names of their children. Who are their kids? Write down the names of their children. Number three, when you have that down, go ahead and write down what their Starbucks order is. If you were gonna stop and pick them up something from Starbucks, what would you get for them? Do you know what they drink? Number four, where did they grow up? What's their hometown? Maybe it's where their parents live right now or where they spent most of their childhood. What would that be for them? Number five, what was their first job? Especially if these are people who you work with, I am confident you know their entire work history. So write down what their very first job was. Number six, what is their biggest fear in life? What is their biggest fear in life? And number seven, what's their social security? Okay, I'm just kidding. All right, so how many, tell the truth, how many of you were actually able to answer all of these questions except that last one about just even one person who you wrote down on your list? Okay, I see like three hands, and that's three more than I expected. How many of us, on the other hand, found that we can't actually answer those questions about the people that we wrote down? Now, granted, I know that some of those questions were a little over the top, but the whole point of this is not so that you feel convicted, but maybe just so you just feel a little bit bad and realize that we don't actually know the people who we spend a lot of time with on any given day. And so today, as we talk about caring for the people in our lives, I want you to realize that in order for us to care for them, we have to actually know at least a little bit about them. We believe that taking this pastoral care approach in our workplace is one of the most effective ways that we can truly unleash the love of Jesus all across our city. So today, my goal is to give you some very practical tools for you to add to your playbook that can help you do that just a little bit better. Now, I know for a fact that as soon as I just said pastoral care a minute ago, there are people in this room who immediately put up this guard and thought, that's just something you're supposed to do. That's what the church does. That's not my responsibility. But all pastoral care is it means that you take an approach that offers someone some spiritual guidance. So that means that every person who has any kind of relationship with Jesus Christ is capable of doing just that. Now, I also know that when I talk about the idea of getting to know people a little bit better, some of you cringe because you don't want to get to know people better, let alone them letting them get to know you better too. But when the end goal of all of this is a relationship with Jesus Christ for that person who you want to care for better, I feel like maybe we can put some of that awkwardness to the side. If you are a leader in your organization at any level, I would imagine that it is important to you that the people who work for you feel cared for and valued and appreciated. That is nothing new. It's leadership 101. Because when people feel cared for, there's a better chance that your retention rate's going to improve, right? Because people don't want to leave a place where they really feel loved and cared for. It helps create this culture of trust where people start cheering for each other instead of competing. And every project is approached as a team approach instead of every man for himself. But the reality is that without some serious intentionality and planning, people just don't feel cared for. And so across America, we've seen this insane increase in the way that companies are offering perks and benefits to their employees because they feel like if they just maybe throw some money at it or throw some stuff, that it'll fix everything. So we see an increase in flexibility in work hours. Now you can work from home, or maybe there's a more casual dress code. And then there are the financial perks and benefits where you get a bonus at the end of the quarter or some extra time off if you meet some goals. Now, none of these things are bad things. These are things we all enjoy, right? But they don't always ensure that people feel cared for and known and loved. The Harvard Business Review found that as these perks and benefits are offered more than ever before, what actually helps create this environment where people feel cared for is the ability to create an environment that fosters workplace well-being. And they narrowed it down to six very specific characteristics that define this idea of workplace well-being. And it probably won't surprise you when I tell you that number one on that list was feeling cared for. They want to be known. They want to be loved. Number two, they want to be shown compassion. They want forgiveness for their mistakes. They want to see people inspiring one another. They want somebody to emphasize the meaning of their work that they're doing. And they want to see people treating one another with respect and gratitude and trust and integrity. Now, when you look at that list, do you see anything in there that implies that you need to throw more money at people? Now, to be clear, I am not in any way implying that it is the responsibility of only leaders in an organization to create this kind of culture. I think the responsibility of those things lies on every single one of us, because when each of us does our part to help improve the culture for the people we work with, you never know who this person who you're caring for is then going to care for as well, and they might even take some of those skills home into their families and care for them better too. There's a story in the Bible of a man named Jabez, and if you're not familiar with this story, side note, Jabez, his name actually means he will cause pain. Now, I don't know about you, but I feel really bad for him growing up as a child with a name that meant he will cause pain because he probably didn't have very many friends. And I would imagine that people ran away from him, assuming that at any point he was going to cause some kind of pain in their life. But I want to read to you this prayer that Jabez cries out to God because I think it sets the tone for how we can respond to God as well. So read with me in 1 Chronicles chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. It says, there was this man named Jabez, who was more honorable than any of his brothers. His mother named him Jabez because his birth had been so painful. He was the one who prayed to the God of Israel. He said, oh, that you would bless me and expand my territory. Please be with me in all that I do and keep me from all trouble and pain. And God granted him his request. Now, when we read this passage, I don't know about you, but I think it would be very easy for any of us to assume that what Jabez is asking God for is more power, right? He's obviously power hungry. He wants more power, more control. He wants more authority. He wants more land to be in charge of, right? But what Jabez is actually asking God for when he says, expand my territory, he's asking that God would prepare his heart and would bless him with more people to care for. He wanted to make life better for people who lived outside of the area where he already had influence, and he knew that it was only by God's strength that that would be possible. Now, I don't know about you, but when I think about stopping and asking God for more responsibility right now, I get a little overwhelmed by that. I think some of us are living at capacity, and the thought of having more people to care for, more people to love, more people to show up consistently, a lot of us would run away from that very quickly. And yet here Jabez is asking God for the privilege and the honor of giving him more people to care for. He wants to redeem his name and to show people that he's not going to cause pain. He's actually going to bring blessing into their lives. This story is such a beautiful reminder that cultivating a pastor's heart is not something that we achieve in life. It's not something that can be developed through some theological training. The ability to care for someone is not something that's taught in the classroom at a seminary. It is taught in real time as you show up in the real life moments when the people who you love and the people who you care for are at their worst. Now, I know that many of you have already done this for someone in your life, but let this serve as the reminder that God still needs you to do that for more people, and that includes the people in your workplaces who are brokenhearted. In John 15, 5, Jesus instructs us. He says, yes, I am the vine and you are the branches. Those who remain in me and I in them will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. So can this verse stand as a foundation as we start talking about how we can love the vil in our workplaces and do a better job at this, that if we go out that and we run at it as hard as we can, and we think even for a second that we can do that because of some kind of power that's within us, our love is going to run dry. But if we can remember that all of that is only possible because of how much God loves us and how much he can share that love through us, then there's going to be no limit to what he can accomplish through our lives. So we're going to talk, I want to give you some very practical tools that are going to help you care for the people in your life just a little bit better. So I just want you to hear one thing today that you can implement in your workplace or in your life starting tomorrow. I want to offer you a framework that's really just based on the examples of how Jesus lived. It's nothing earth-shattering. But I think and I believe that taking a pastoral care approach means that we always remain present and proactive and responsive to the needs that we see around us. So we're going to talk about how we can implement this framework in our lives to care better for people, specifically the people in our workplaces. So that first point there, remain present. What does that mean? How do we remain present and available to the people in our lives? I think there are three specific ways that we do that. The first way that we can remain present in someone's life is simply by being aware of our body language. What is the message that we are sending people when they see us, particularly in the workplace? Do you have a job that your day is completely jam-packed from beginning to end without any margin in it at all? Because if you do, there's a good chance that you walk into work every single day walking with purpose and walking like your day is completely jam-packed. You're hurried, you're rushed, you're stressed. You are not available to the people around you. And if you head straight to your desk or straight to your workstation and you put your head down and start working first, people are not going to assume that you want to be there for them and that you want to be someone who's present in their lives. So how can you add some simple margin in your life so that people know that you're present? And the way that you send your body language tells them more than you probably realize it does. I have a friend who shared that she always keeps an empty chair in her workspace. She works in like a typical office environment where she has a cubicle. Now she doesn't have clients or customers coming in to see her. This chair is there for the sole purpose of making sure her coworkers know that if they ever need someone to listen to, someone to talk to, she's always available. So maybe where you work or where you spend most of your time, an empty chair doesn't even make sense because they're not even chairs where you work. What would an analogy of that empty chair be for you to show people that you are present in their lives, you are present when you are at work and you are available to them just to be a listening ear? How can you be more aware of your body language and make sure it's sending the impression to people that you are present and you are available to them? The second way that we can be present in our workplace is simply by practicing the sacred art of listening. It actually takes an awful lot of effort to listen to someone because listening is not actually the same as hearing what the person is saying. Now, before some of you elbow your spouse on that, please hear me say this. It is actually quite a skill and a gift to be an active listener. Because of our human sinful nature, it is natural that many of us, as soon as someone starts talking, we immediately are thinking about this story of this time where we had something similar happen, and maybe if I told them about this, it would help them know how they could handle this better. And then this person's still talking as you're thinking through like how you're going to respond. They keep talking for 2 more minutes, and when they finally stop, you realize that you have no idea what they just said for the last 2 minutes, so you're not even sure that your story that you thought was going to work is even going to fit anymore. So instead, you just awkwardly kind of smile and nod your head because you don't really know what they said and how they need you to respond. So how can you be a more active listener? How can you practice the art of listening? It's simple things like remaining eye contact. Put your phone down. Don't think about how you're going to respond, but think and hear what the person in front of you is saying. So if you do have a story that really does apply to what they're saying, don't interrupt them. Let them continue talking until they're completely done and then say, "Would you like some advice?" Ask them if they want that, because sometimes they don't. They just want someone to hear them and to feel understood. I saw this quote on Instagram a couple weeks ago that said, "When life gives him lemons, don't tell him about your cousin's friend who died of lemons." Because what is that going to accomplish? It really doesn't help anybody at all. Research has shown that our minds can think up to 800 words per minute, and yet we only speak about 125. Some of you are thinking I probably speak a little higher, more than 125 words a minute, and that's fine. That's who I am. It's fine. But here's the thing. If we only get to hear about 20% of what someone is thinking, then what is their nonverbal communication telling us? What can we actually hear simply by looking at them? If we can be active listeners, we let people know that we care about them so much just by remaining present in their life during those moments. The third way that we can remain present, the third thing, is to simply assume the best. Have any of you ever been a part of a team or a group of people who, no matter what was happening, it always felt like they were sure that they were working harder than everyone else around them? I have been a part of a team like that, and it's embarrassing to admit how easy it is to get wrapped up in that kind of toxic thinking. But the reality is there will be times in our lives when it feels like we are on the ship, and this ship is sinking so fast, and there's a hole in the bottom of the ship, and we're bailing buckets of water out of the ship as fast as we can to try to keep it from sinking, and we look over, and there's this person who's just kind of sitting there, and it looks like they're going to grab a bucket of popcorn and just sit back and enjoy the show. I think in those moments, it is easy for us to assume that they want nothing more than for our ship to sink. But what if, in those moments, we could assume the best about these people? What if we could extend them the benefit of the doubt? What if instead of assuming that they are out to get us and they're out to attack us, what if instead we just stopped and in that moment we said, God, can you help me? Can you just pray out to him, ask him to help you in that moment instead of responding? Now, if I'm being honest with you, which is very important right now, this is probably the part of this entire message that feels the most hypocritical to me to say to you. Because if I'm honest with myself, praying to God for those people is not always my first natural inclination. I get offended pretty easily. I can get defensive quicker than I like to admit. This is something I've known about myself for a very long time, and I'm working on it, but it's not fixed, and it might not ever be fixed, but that doesn't mean that it should keep me from praying to God in those moments. And if that was my first inclination, I am confident that God would convict me, and he would remind me that that person is just doing the very best that they can. And if I could assume the best about them, then I would be able to let it go, and we could come together and really work from a team approach instead of always at each other. That's one of the best ways we can remain present at work, is simply by having each other's backs, assume the best about each other, and move forward from there. So again, how do we remain present? We're aware of our body language, we practice the art of listening, and we assume the best about each other. I asked some Northeast stakeholders, some friends of mine, to give me some examples of how they do this in the workplace. I already shared with you the empty chair example, but here were some other things people said. You know, why don't you just take a daily loop around your office? If you have that kind of office space, just make sure you walk around and just say hi to everybody. What if you bring a bag of snacks for when you know things are going to get a little rough and people are just over it? What if you cancel a meeting that you have the ability to cancel when you know that people are just too overwhelmed for that? If you're present and aware of what's happening around you, you're going to be more likely to be able to care for people and to respond to the needs that you see. The second way, the second thing that I think all of us can take this pastoral care approach, is simply by remaining proactive. And I think there are also three ways that we can be proactive. When it comes to being proactive, all it means is that we just stay one step ahead of the needs that we're going to see around us. We have to be aware of what's going to come. So I think the first way that we remain proactive is simply by being able to self-evaluate. Now, some of us don't enjoy this very much because it requires that we take a really hard look at how we're doing when it comes to caring for people. Whether you're a leader in your organization by title or simply by influence, all of us have the ability to make people want to follow us and to follow our lead. John Maxwell is a leadership guru of sorts, and he came up with three questions that people always ask themselves without even realizing they're asking themselves questions about a person before they determine if you are someone that they can follow, someone that they can really let in and share with what's going on. These three simple questions: can you help me? Do you care for me? And can I trust you? So how are you doing in each of these areas? How do you think the people around you, either at work or in your life, would answer these questions? What have you done to show them that they can say yes to these? So I think it's important right now that we do a little self-evaluation. So I want you to think back to those three names that you wrote down at the beginning of our time together and think about just one of those people. Don't choose the easy one who you know is going to say yes. Think about the one that's going to be a little harder to crack. How is this person going to answer these three questions? Let's unpack it a little bit. Can you help me? Have you done anything to this person to help them? Do you have knowledge about their job that could help them do a little bit better? Have you seen anybody else make a mistake in their role that you would love to help them prevent them from making that same mistake? How have you shown that you can help them in their job performance? That second question, do you care for me? What have you done to show this person that you care for them? Do you know their spouse's name? Do you know what their hobbies are? Do you know if they have a church home? Do you know if they have a relationship with Jesus? How have you shown this person that you care for them? And then the last one, can I trust you? Do you do what you say you're going to do? Do you show up when you say you're going to show up? Has this person told you things in confidence that you have kept confidential and you haven't used that information to help benefit yourself in some way? If you can't answer all three of these questions with a very simple yes, then unfortunately you are not going to be the person who they come to when things in life get really hard. So how can we be more intentional, do some hard self-evaluation, and make sure that we're staying proactive in how we are prepared and ready to care for people? The second way that we stay proactive in the workplace when it comes to caring for people is simply by creating healthy boundaries. You are going to have appropriate boundaries in place if you're planning to care for people, because there are going to be people in every environment who drain you. These are the people who leave you feeling worse about yourself than you did when you started the conversation. So how can you protect yourself and put some boundaries in place to make sure that what they say or do, that those things don't affect you in a negative way? One of the most dangerous things about truly caring for people is that it's very easy for us to start seeing ourselves as the rescuer. You know, if I don't help this person, if I don't fix this for them, they're not going to make it. But we have to remember that we were never meant to be the rescuer. We, as we attempt to help them in some way and care for them, we're trying to be the catalyst who points them to the rescuer, who is actually God. It's not us. So if you start thinking that you are the rescuer in their life, then you're going to start attracting other people who need to be rescued, and you are just going to be so tired. So don't be surprised if you really let people suck every ounce of energy out of you. Don't be surprised when it starts feeling like they're treating you like a doormat. We have to put appropriate boundaries in place to make sure that when the time comes, we know where to draw the line, and we know that we have to remember that someone else's burden is not always going to be yours to carry. The third way that we remain proactive at work when it comes to caring for people is to simply be a voice for the marginalized. Who are the marginalized where you work? You know, we are called to genuinely love those, especially love those who are different than us. So how are you doing when it comes to that? When you look around at the people you spend the most time with, either at work or in your life, do all these people look just like you? Do they believe what you believe? Do they follow the same people that you follow? Or are they offering anything that adds value to your life to help you understand how different people are experiencing life? So in your workplace in particular, who would be considered a minority? Is it a minority either by race or by age or by gender or by sexual orientation? What are you doing to help these people not feel like they are the minority? What could you do to be a voice for them? How could you stand up for them? How could you notice when they're being left out when nobody else notices? How can you celebrate their accomplishments when nobody else is? You know, if you've never felt like you were a minority, just imagine always feeling unwelcomed and uninvited. And I know that none of us want someone to feel that way. So you being a voice for them could be the catalyst, the moment in their life where they realize that the people actually do care. And it might open an opportunity at some point in your life to show them that there's this even bigger person who cares about them and loves them. How can you stand up for people who have no one else standing up for them? There's a passage in 1 John that I want to read to you that really, I think, reminds us of how we've been instructed to do this. It's nothing new. He's already given us the instructions and the framework for it, but sometimes it's so easy for us to forget. So read these words with me. 1 John 3, it says, "We know what real love is because Jesus gave up his life for us. So we also ought to give up our lives for our brothers and sisters. So if someone has enough money to live well and sees a brother or sister in need but shows no compassion, how can God's love be in that person? Dear children, let's not merely say that we love each other. Let's show the truth by our actions. Our actions will show that we belong to the truth, so we will be confident when we stand before God. And even if we feel guilty, God is greater than our feelings, and he knows everything." So how are we giving up our lives for our brothers and sisters at work? I asked a similar question to Northeast friends. I asked how they were caring for people when it comes to being proactive. And here are some simple examples. Again, I hope that you are able to start thinking of some practical examples of your own. But here's a place to start. Why don't you just ask about the person before the work? People first, paperwork second. If you're going to stop for coffee, text your team and see if they need anything. There are other examples there. But what's it going to be for you? How can you be proactive in the ways that you are caring for people? So how are we proactive? Let's go over that list. Again, we self-evaluate, we create healthy boundaries, and we be a voice for the marginalized. How are you doing that right now, or how can you start? I've got one more point that I want to make, but I think it's really important before I just keep giving you facts and ideas that you actually get to hear from someone who's already living this out in his workplace. So today, I'm honored and excited to get to welcome out Richard. He is the Vice President of American Roofing and Metal, and he's truly living this out on a daily basis, so I think you might even trust his word a little bit more than mine. Please welcome him up here.
It's an honor to speak to you. One of the things I love about Northeast is how intentional they are and how they challenge us to take our faith outside these church walls. And we're so fortunate to be part of such a great church. As Melinda said, my name is Richard Musquette. I'm the vice president of a local company called American Roofing and Metal. We're the largest roofing company in the state of Kentucky. While we're not a perfect company, we always try to remember what really matters, and that is eternity. It's to glorify God. It's not to make a lot of money. I mean, we want to make money. Trust me, we want to make money. But we also want to remember what really matters in the lives of our employees. It's called eternity. And I give credit to our president of the company, Josh Steinreich, who's a stakeholder here at Northeast. He created a vision statement that started with these words, inspired by love. And love is a foundation of what we're trying to do. We recognize that we are broken people in need of a savior. And so what we're doing is we're trying to love on people. And we're trying to build strong relationships so we can be there when they need us. And because of our intentionality, I've got a chance to, an opportunity to counsel people when they're struggling with drug addictions. Have the opportunity to pray with people. When someone loses a loved one or just someone struggling in life, I've got a chance to step into that because of our intentionality. So the largest roofing company in the state of Kentucky has a vision statement that inspired by love. And while many companies want to demand greatness, we want to inspire it. We want to inspire it by God's love. And now we're careful not to offend, but we don't want to hold back from the truth. In December, we had a Christmas party. We had about 250 people attend. And so I want to kind of share with you how I closed my talk. I talked for about 10 minutes, and this is kind of the way I closed it out. I'm going to read it to you. I said, it's all about Jesus. Always has been and always will be. He's the answer to your problems. He's the answer to your questions. He's the answer to your life. Jesus said, I have come that you may have life and life to the full. I said, do you want life to the full? It's found only in one place, and that is Jesus. I guess you could say I didn't hold back. Because Scripture calls us to be the light. But how can we be the light if people don't know what we stand for? If you're an employee of a company, how is your light shining at work? If you're an owner of a company, you set the tone. Don't be afraid. How is your light shining? God has been so good to me. I am so blessed. And I will bet that a lot of you, that God has been really good to you, and you are so blessed. But there's a verse that haunts me. It says, when much is giving, much is expected. And God expects a lot from us, from all aspects of our life, and that includes the workplace. But for some reason, when it comes to our workplace, we turn off our faith. But that's the place we need to turn it up even more, because people need to hear about our God. That's where they need to hear about him. Because one day we will be held accountable for the life that God gave us. And God will, the life that he gives, we will stand before God and we will be held accountable for that. And we will be held accountable for how we use the resources that we are given as well. So I just want to leave you with a couple of questions. How are you leveraging what God has given you for his kingdom? And how are you leveraging what God has given you at your workplace? Thank you.
How are you leveraging what God has given you? I love that question so much. And it sends us perfectly into the final point of this entire message today, which is to be responsive. If you want to really respond to what happens in someone's life, you have to be ready for it. And I think that the first way that you can do that is to welcome the interruptions. Now, when I say interruptions, I am talking about the big, heavy, uninvited, unwelcome interruptions that are going to come. Some of us will face addiction, depression, illness, debt, divorce, stress, anxiety, or grief. There are going to be times when we have no choice but to face that interruption in our life. But then there are going to be times when we get the opportunity to step into someone else's interruption and to walk alongside them every step of the way. And we have to engage in that interruption with them. We cannot run away from it. One of the worst things we could do after spending all this time and energy being present and proactive in their life would be to run away as soon as life gets real, because most people have already experienced people who have done that to them. When things just get a little uncomfortable or a little too much, people walk away. When we look at the life that Jesus lived, his entire life was defined by interruptions. It always felt like he was on his way, he was walking somewhere, and someone stopped him and interrupted him. And he was interrupted to care for someone, and then someone else interrupted him so they could care for him. Even his interruptions were often interrupted, and yet no matter what, no matter who was standing in front of him, Jesus never allowed that person to feel like an interruption. Every person who needed Jesus to care for them was just as important and just as significant as the next. So what if, instead of seeing these interruptions as inconveniences, we start seeing them as opportunities for ministry? You know, people's lives and the interruptions, the real life stuff that comes with them, they are not the enemy of being productive and effective at work. And if we start believing that the times that people need us, when we have so much to do at work, if we start thinking that our to-do list is more important, then I think it's possible that we're operating with a very dysfunctional view of the entire purpose of work. We have a woman who worked here at Northeast. She retired in December. Her name was Darlene. Some of you know her. Unfortunately for Darlene, her desk sat immediately next to the copy machine. Now, some of you know why I say unfortunately, and it's because in every office, on every staff, there's at least one person who just can't get along with the copy machine, and here at Northeast, it's me. So it doesn't matter what I'm trying to print or copy or what I'm trying to do. I have the ability to ruin the whole machine before it even gets started. So unfortunately for Darlene, she was always right there, so I always interrupted her, and I always asked for her help, and she never allowed me to feel like I was interrupting her, even though I am confident that whatever she was working on was way more important than what I was trying to print from that copy machine. But before I knew it, she would come over, and she would immediately open, like, door 37 and pull out the paper jam. She knew exactly what the problem was, but before I knew it, she was asking me how Jonathan's job was going and how Amelia likes first grade. And she was asking me if I'd had my quiet time this month, which is a study day here at Northeast. You know, in those moments, she challenged me, and she used those opportunities of interruption for ministry in ways that she'll probably never fully understand. So how in our lives, when these interruptions come up, how can we stop treating them as interruptions? You know, when these times come, when these really hard things show up, with those things are going to come long hours of supporting people. You're going to hear about sorrows galore that most of us could never even imagine. But with those hard things is also going to come an invitation. It's an invitation to serve someone, to love someone, to show up in someone's life like never before. So how can we be better about welcoming the interruptions that come up in our lives? The second way that we can really be responsive when it comes to caring for people is to simply show some empathy. You know, chances are you will never be able to fully understand what that person is going through, but that does not in any way disqualify you from walking alongside them every step of the way. So how can you show them some empathy? I think some of us get so freaked out and assume we have to have some like scripture to quote or some really great paragraph to recite that's going to counsel them and help them get to the other side, but sometimes it's just the simplest of phrases that can make all the difference. So how about just, "I'm so sorry this happened to you," or "I hear you, I can see why you're upset, you know, thank you for sharing your story with me," or "I'm grieving with you," or "I can't make it better, but I can cover your shift tomorrow so you don't have to worry about it," or "I can't make it better, but I could give you a ride home," "I can't make it better, but I could bring you dinner tomorrow." Or how about this one? "I can't make it better, but I know someone who can, and his name is Jesus." Sometimes it just takes really, really simple words, but we overcomplicate it almost every chance we get. So in that moment, don't allow that person to feel like they are broken. They already feel that way. Don't try to take away their pain because you can't. but you can offer them some hope. You can offer them some empathy so they know that they are not alone, because that's probably all they need to hear. The third way that we remain responsive to people is to simply know what's available. And when I say know what's available, I'm talking about knowing what's available to you as people who are part of our Northeast family. Because like it or not, you are the front lines of the care ministry at Northeast. You are the front lines because you are going to have influence with hundreds and hundreds of people who we will never meet or even have the opportunity to connect with. So you are the front lines, but you are not the end all be all. And that means that we want to help equip you to better understand how to care for people, but you have to know what's available to you. So do you know how easy it is to share the link to a message that you think someone needs to hear? Maybe that's something that helped you through a hard time, or to send them the lyrics to a worship song we sing that helps you feel just a little closer to God or gives you a little bit of hope. You know, it's in those moments when people are at their worst that they're experiencing something new that they never have before. So that means they might be open to experiencing something new they haven't heard before, like Jesus or church or talking to other people who have been through the same experiences. So why not use an opportunity to connect them to a group here at Northeast, a care group? You know, we have groups for people who are going through grief and going through divorce, people who understand exactly what they're feeling, but you have to know what's available, what's going on, in order to point them in the right direction. And we also want to be a support for you. We want to offer you resources. So if you've never prayed with someone, but you know that this person needs prayer, then give us a call. We'll pray with them, with you there with us. If you know that you should go visit them in the hospital, but that totally freaks you out, give us a call. We'll come with you. We're not just going to go for you. We're going to go with you, and we're going to walk alongside you every step of the way as you discover how to really become that pastoral care person in their life. But you have to know what's available in order to do that. So how do you be responsive? You welcome the interruptions, you show some empathy, and you know what is available. I have some examples, again, of just how people at Northeast have already been responsive in their own workplaces when it comes to caring for people. Maybe you can try one of these. Someone said they knew someone who used a vacation day. They took a day off because they had a coworker who had to go to the hospital for a procedure, and they didn't have any family in town. So they took a day off to care for them. Do you know how much that meant to that person? A significant other forgot someone's birthday, so they threw her a surprise party. How do you respond when things happen that people don't know how to deal with? There's a passage in Colossians chapter 3 that says, "Since God chose you to be the holy people he loves, you must clothe yourselves with tenderhearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Make allowance for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony. Let the peace that comes from Christ rule in your hearts, for as members of one body, you are called to live in peace." So how are you going to take a pastoral care approach in your workplace and really start caring for people? I feel like I need to throw out kind of a little disclaimer as we start wrapping up. And it's simply that I really believe that one of the most effective ways to care for your coworkers and to care for the people in your life is actually to care for yourself well. Now, you will never be able to control how much attitude or mood or lack of patience a coworker brings to a situation, but you will always be able to control how much empathy and love and care and patience you bring to the conversation. But you can't bring those things to that conversation unless you have experienced God's love in such a deep and meaningful way that you can't help but want to tell them about it. So if you're in a season of life right now where you feel like your cup is empty, then I just want you to take everything that we've talked about today and start applying it to yourself. And I want to give you the freedom and the permission to do just that. Because again, you can't pour from an empty cup. So if your cup is not full, if you don't feel like you've been cared well for or that you're caring for yourself well, then don't try to care for someone else right now. Be present in your own life. Be proactive for yourself and respond to the own needs that come up in your life before you even start doing it for someone else. Can you make a conscious effort to spend time with people who fill your cup, who inspire you, who support you, who make you want to be better? You'll find that in a community group. You can find that in a group of people who can model for you what it means to care for someone so that when the time comes for you to do that for someone else, you're ready. But it's okay if you're not ready right now. The last thing I'm going to ask to all of you is that wherever you work or wherever you spend your time, don't let your organization be known most for the amazing perks and benefits that they have to offer. What if you let your organization be known most because it's the most compassionate place to work that people have ever experience. You know, it only takes one good thing to change the course over someone's life, and we want that one good thing to be Jesus. So I want you to look back right now to the three names that you wrote down at the beginning of our time, and I want you to circle one. I want you to circle one person who you're going to be more intentional about caring for, showing up for. How are you going to show them love today or tomorrow? And then follow through. Let us know how you're going to do it. I would love to hold you accountable. I want to hear the stories of how you truly are becoming the person in your workplace or in your life who cares for other people. And can we be people who can pray that prayer that Jabez prayed that we read at the beginning of our time together, that we will get to a point where we can really ask God to expand our territory and continue blessing us with the opportunity to love for and care for other people? Will you pray with me? Father God, you have given us countless opportunities to show up for people, and sometimes we feel like we're not ready for them, and so we feel like we run away from that chance. But you have never put anyone in our life by accident. So please allow us to know that every person, every coworker, everyone that shows up in our life is there for a specific purpose, and it might just be that it's our responsibility to tell them about you. Let us never take that lightly. Let us walk forward and know that you're with us every step of the way. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.